Attention MongoDB enthusiasts. We've got some exciting news for you. On June 22nd, 2023, MongoDB is bringing its world-renowned .local conference to New York City. This is an event you won't want to miss. At MongoDB.local New York City, you'll have the opportunity to learn about the latest updates and tools to build and deploy mission-critical applications at scale. Whether you're a seasoned developer or just getting started with MongoDB, there's something for everyone at this action-packed event. Get ready to experience an announcement-filled keynote, dive into technical sessions on application development, data modeling, security, and much more. Plus, you'll have the chance to network with like-minded professionals and MongoDB experts. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to boost your MongoDB knowledge and skills. Save the date, June 22nd, 2023, in the heart of the Big Apple, New York City. For more information and to secure your spot, head on over to mdb.link/2023 or check out the show notes of this episode. Be sure to use the code PODCAST50 for a 50% discount on your tickets. See you there. Welcome back to the show. My name is Michael Lin, and this is the MongoDB Podcast. Today on the show, we're talking about podcasts. Perhaps you've thought of starting a podcast. Maybe you've been on a podcast. Shane McAllister returns to the show to drive a conversation with a panel. On the panel, a couple of really great podcasters in their own right, Chris Jenkins of Confluent and Sean Swix Wang of Airbyte. Both of these folks, all three of these folks, have amazing insight and experience in the podcast realm. So if you've thought about podcasting or you're curious about it, stay tuned for that. Remember, check the show notes for links to the accompanying blog article for today's episode, mongodb.com/podcast. Stay tuned. MongoDB.local is coming to a city near you. The next one coming up is October 20th, 2022. San Francisco. MongoDB.local San Francisco is a day filled with educational breakout sessions, announcement-packed keynote presentations, customer stories, free one-on-one Ask the Experts consulting sessions, networking opportunities, and so much more, all for the wonderful price of free. Want to get tickets? Want more information? Visit the show notes at mongodb.com/podcast for more information and details. Okay, well, welcome, everybody. I'm really excited to kick off this conversation in celebration of International Podcast Day. And I thought it would be good if we started with a bit of a roundtable introducing the folks on the episode. So let's first start with Chris Jenkins. He's a developer advocate at Confluent. He's been on the show before. Chris, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm very well, enjoying International Podcast Day.
And we're also once again joined by a former guest of the podcast, Sean Swix Wang. How are you?
Hey, Michael. Glad to be back.
And then, of course, ever-present Shane McAllister. Shane, good to see you again.
Yeah, good to be here and sharing it with you. I'm the outside casual observer here, Mike. I want to ask you some questions about the inception of the MongoDB podcast, too, for International Podcast Day.
All right. Well, then let's get right into the discussion. Let's talk about podcasting and the role of podcasting at a tech company. I recently spent some time thinking about this, and I'm going to include some links in the show notes. I wrote an article called Four Reasons Why Your Tech Company Needs a Podcast. And I firmly believe that podcasting is a medium. It's growing. It's exploding in growth. And it's a really fantastic way to reach your audience, especially in the tech space.
Yes, and it is interesting, I suppose, the rise and the ebb and flow of podcasts. I was in an airport last week and came across a magazine called The Podcast Reader. I don't know if you've come across this. I sent a picture of it to Mike.
What?
I thought, you know, we've jumped the shark there. We now have a magazine for a podcast. But anyway.
And an in-flight magazine at that, right?
So an International Podcast Day in a couple of years. Hallmark will have cards for this. We're, no doubt you will give it to your favorite podcaster. It will become a big event. But for today, and really this is geared towards our listeners and listeners who are in tech companies about, you know, the podcast, what it means to listeners, what it means to producers, and how to go about it as a company. So, Chris, let me jump to you first. How did you get started with your podcast initially, and what was the inception?
Oh, well, for me, it was I inherited it from my boss, actually. So I joined Confluent about 18 months ago. And after I'd been there 6 months, the existing host said he was moving on.
Okay.
And I was there thinking, well, I love this guy and I don't want to jump in his grave, but I've got to raise my hand because that sounds like a lot of fun and someone's going to have to take it over.
Okay. So you were handed something that was preformed. And
yes.
did you have to change it and go about something differently, or did you just carry on with the flow and I suppose how it was structured?
Initially, I kept very close to the existing structure because I was very aware that I had to carry the audience with me to a new host. But I've gradually started devolving it into my own thing. I think a big part of that is trying to widen our scope a bit. I think we've always been a very kind of Kafka-focused podcast, and I want to get into a slightly broader technical conversation where our audience goes from being Kafka people to anyone who might be interested in Kafka as well as the area of technology generally. So if you're interested in event systems or databases or programming languages, you might be our future listener.
Excellent. So the broader development ecosystem. So that brings us nicely to asking Sean, how did he get started? And you know, what have you built over your time podcasting?
So it's funny because we at Airbyte, we're in the data engineering space.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been asked to create a podcast a couple of times, but I've studiously avoided it so far, which might be a little nice piece of contention for Michael. I'm just trying to figure out a good angle for podcasting, because I think there's a lot of competition in this space. And sometimes, you know, it's the same circus of people going around and telling the same stories on different podcasts. And we didn't really want to contribute to that. We wanted to find our voice, find a concept that worked, that would actually add to the debate. So I'm still pretty new here at Airbyte, and we're trying to figure it out. But the policy has been just be an active participant on other people's podcasts while we figure it out, right? Personally, I actually, so I try to do the inverse of everything. So I do have a personal podcast where I take clips of stuff I enjoyed. I've clipped stuff from both of your podcasts, Chris and Michael. I think creating your personal mixtape is essentially how I describe it. It's a lost art from the 80s.
The word tape might confuse some of our listeners, but they'll have to Google it or something like that.
It's the best form of storage.
So let me, poacher turned gamekeeper, let me ask a question of Mike Lane. Mike, you were the inception of the MongoDB podcast. We didn't have a podcast before you started it. So, you know, why and how did you take on this mantle for podcasting for MongoDB?
Okay, so I do want to correct you just a little bit, Shane. Mm-hmm. I got involved with the podcast after learning that Nick Raboy and Wesley Faulkner were thinking about starting the podcast at MongoDB. And I was just so in love with the idea. I had created my own podcast outside of the tech space, in the addiction recovery space, just as a personal pet project. And I was really interested in mm-hmm. podcasting from a technical perspective for MongoDB. So I have to credit Nick and Wesley for the idea. And Nick and I launched. Wesley ended up not being on the podcast, but we love you, Wesley. and Nick and I ran it for, I think like close to a year before Nick decided that he wanted to do other things. He's still getting involved in live streams and doing an amazing job as a developer advocate at MongoDB. So that's the correction. And let me get back to the question. Tell me one more time, what is it that you want to know about the inception?
I suppose, look, it leads us to the question about how hard was it to convince those that needed convincing mm-hmm. inside of MongoDB initially, and we'll move around to Chris as well, that a podcast was a thing to do and to devote a lot of time, because I'm now learning the work that it takes, not just people chatting on microphones. It's actually the pre and the post and everything else in between as well, too. So it does take a lot of time and effort.
So I want to turn it over to Chris and Sean to get their take on this. But for me personally, and for Nick, when we started it out, it was very much a let's prove the concept. Let's launch it, do what we can do with it as a side project. We didn't have the ability to do this as a full-time job. So we were very much looking for ways that we could accomplish the mission of developer advocacy, reaching the developer community with interesting topics, engaging them, hopefully giving them information that they needed to do their job better. And we accomplished that. I mean, it's a difficult thing to measure, but we've been able to look at the numbers, have conversations, and we've been having a really great time since then. So since the side project days, it's actually become my full-time job. So I'm grateful to have that, but I'll throw it over to Chris. What's your take on the inception of podcasting and goals?
So I think one thing I want to pick up on is the question, like, how do you convince people to go for that in your organization, to go for the effort, right? And one thing I realize coming to developer advocacy is quite how much time you spend on creating different kinds of content. You know, you write a good, worthwhile conference talk that can take several weeks. You work on some documentation to get that right. That's a lot of work. All the things we do take a surprising amount of time if you want to do genuine, high quality content. And I actually think the podcast is quite a high return on time invested. To if you can find that flow of interesting people, and they are out there, then to have a conversation with them for an hour in reality takes maybe a couple of days' work overall. But that's actually really good return on investment for an hour's worth of useful information you can send out to people.
I like that concept of, and what we try to push too is to use the podcast to amplify developer advocacy and the work that's being done, not only internally, but externally. Insofar as you rightly say, Chris, we've spent a long time crafting a show, a talk, and we've spent a long time crafting a blog post. But we consume media in different ways. And for me, my podcast consumption is predominantly in the car or commuting, which will then spark other ideas. Over to you, Sean. You're kind of saying you're trying to find the audience and the reason why to be podcasting at Airbyte. What are your thoughts in general about the value of podcasting?
I would say there's a very interesting post on Hacker News that has basically said, you know, I use podcasting as my personal learning tool. And as a career changer myself coming up through tech, I definitely leveraged that. I will go back in time to see what people were saying authentically at that point in time, and then try to basically bootstrap my own experience that I don't have, right? By listening on the walls of conversation, like being a fly on the wall conversation of people who know a lot more than me. And you pick up these like small little terms that seem insignificant, but just immersing yourself, it's almost like a language immersion type of thing. When you learn a new language, you want to immerse yourself in the way that people talk to each other. And, you know, when it comes to engineering, it's no different. You want to think about what people are saying, what concerns people are raising, what people are not saying, and it can be super insightful. I will say, I think sometimes people try to be too informative in a podcast when it doesn't really translate very well because you're trying to communicate technical issues. You have a diagram in your head, but it doesn't come across. I often think that there should be an accompanying article to each podcast where you can say like, all right, someone's written an article and then let's have the podcast discussion about it so that you can have sort of a backup article to center your understanding as you discuss it, because sometimes people just get lost. I will also say maybe there are different roles or jobs to be done in podcasting. Sometimes you're there for information. Sometimes you're there for just entertainment. Sometimes you're there for news. And there's different roles you can perform for the listener that once you establish that contract, I think people come and choose your show based on, you know, what fits into their lives.
I think it's very interesting the point you raise about the level of in-depth that you can go into on a podcast. I think I was at MongoDB a couple of months and I joined Mike and our colleague Nick Raboy on a podcast talking about Realm, MongoDB's mobile product. And I don't know, Mike, whether it was you or whether it was Nick, but one of you asked me to explain conflict resolution in a moment. I can see the diagram in my head. I understand how it works. But trying to talk somebody through conflict resolution when it regards to data, super hard. So, yeah.
I love that you bring that up, Sean, because I think I am so guilty of that. I'm trying to bring value in every possible way to the listeners. And sometimes I go a little crazy in that. But yeah, I appreciate the thoughtful approach to that.
Well, I think show notes, you know, essentially can plug for a lot of what people might need in terms of visual aid. I definitely view podcasting as a form of like an audio accompaniment to something that people can look up in real life. Like if I find an interesting guest on one of your podcasts, I will go onto their landing page or whatever article or book they're talking about and actually investigate more. You don't have to treat the podcast as an endpoint. It's more of a starting point for people browsing to see if they discover something interesting in their free time. And I think that maybe liberates you from the responsibility or duty of being complete or being informative. You don't have to teach, you just have to inspire or you have to interest.
Yeah, love that. I have a question for you on that. You know, I love the concept of the podcast being a starting point. And one of the most difficult things that I've wrestled with is how to get people to take that next step. What is the most effective way that during a conversation that I can leave breadcrumbs in an effective way that people will be able to use that as a starting point and then take that next step? Now, mentioning a URL is pretty much, I have zero luck. Like if I say, you know, what we're talking about here is xyz.com, there's zero clicks on that. And then if I say xyz.com, check the show notes for the link, I might get maybe 1 out of 100. The listener count could be 100. I might get one click on that. So I'm curious, as podcasters and folks that are really trying to help developers do their jobs better, what ways do you leverage calls to actions? What methods do you use? I'll throw it over to you, Chris.
Oh, gosh. Do you know, I've got to confess, I don't think about calls to action that much. I mean, we do have like the usual advert, you know, there's a sign up code for our cloud service. But the tone of the podcast to me is the conversation that I want to have with an interesting developer if we meet in the pub after work. Maybe that metaphor will land better with the Irish and the English than with the Americans. I don't know. But, you know,
a coffee shop or in the gym.
A coffee shop. In the gym. Yes. When we're on the treadmill, what's the conversation we'll have? And I see that as an end in itself. So maybe I should put my marketing hat on and think more about calls to action. But in my heart of hearts, if we have an interesting conversation and we get to share that with other people, I've achieved my goal, you know?
Yeah, I'm curious how you guys think about ROI, because you know you started the show mentioning that MongoDB has seen really good ROI. I've just not tried at all. You know, my general philosophy is there's brand marketing and there's performance marketing, and if you try to mix the two, you never get good results. So brand marketing being put your logo on a billboard, nothing else, just like repeated exposure gets people mm-hmm. to like you more just because they've seen you more. It's a very, very fundamental sense of human behavior, and repeated exposure to Chris's voice has definitely made me like Confluent more.
Can I get that in writing, please?
Yes. Well, you just got it in voice and video.
Oh, that'll do.
But if you try to mix performance marketing, which is like, you know, Chris's voice plus, like, here's a coupon code, like, it just kind of muddles the message. And Seth Godin, who's one of these marketing gurus, has always said, like, you're playing on a different level if you try to make everything transactional. So I tend to not do that, but I know in my heart of hearts, like, yes, like, if we're being paid to do this job, we should try to show some kind of ROI. It's just very difficult to.
That's the thing that, you know, I need at some point at the end of the day, I have a great time on the podcast. And I truly believe that, you know, just based on the goal of trying to help developers do a better job, more easily use the tools at their disposal, that I'm having an impact. But it's difficult for me to go to my bosses and say, I need another X dollars for this year to run the podcast. They're always asking me, how do we know? I mean, they want the same things I do, but of course they want to be able to talk to the street and talk to the board members and mention, you know, the specifics of how we're moving the needle.
And I suppose, look, the show notes are there, and we religiously try to fill the show notes. But as you say, Mike, you know, the traction through the show notes wouldn't necessarily stand out in any report in terms of the success. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, maybe that's the medium, right? You listen to something and you hear it and you get somebody's name or a company's name in your head and you just go Google it. You know, you're not going to go into the show notes and find a link to click on that. You'll bypass that and do it that way. But I think, you know, it brings us to a very valid point of, at some point, rather personal podcasting aside, if you're doing it in a business level or a corporate level, you do need a justification. So how would you measure success? Is it purely listens and downloads? Is it people's awareness that the podcast exists in the first place? Is it the caliber of the podcast and its ability to attract other guests from other companies or the ecosystem that you're operating in? Throw back to Chris on that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree. At the end of the day, you've got to hit that bottom line, right? We're not just paid for a hobby. So the way we measure it is quantitatively, it's mostly downloads. We also publish mm-hmm. our podcast on YouTube. So we get a bit more data from YouTube, which is one of the reasons we do it. So we get like, how long do people listen for? At what point do they drop off? That kind of thing. And those are all good metrics, especially if they're gradually growing. That makes the case that this conversation is a way to reach developers and something that makes you interesting to the outside world. And then there's the kind of qualitative stuff, which is comments, obviously, reviews on Apple Podcasts, so they're hard to get hold of. And just things like our company organizes a conference twice a year. And when I go to those conferences, people come up because they want to talk to me because they've heard me on the podcast. Not to say it's an ego thing. It's not about having fans, but it's like, yes, you've actually reached what you thought was a complete stranger. That's got to be valuable. I was, because I live in London, I was in Melbourne a couple of months ago, and somebody in Melbourne came up to me and said, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. And it's like, my God, how am I reaching to the other side of the planet just by having conversations in the pub, which we record? You know, that's even if you can't put an exact dollar amount on that, you've got to tell your accountant to bench that under the goodwill figure, right?
Yeah, I think we got to trademark that one. Conversations in the pub. Mike, can we move this entire production to a pub? I think that would be brilliant. I think, Mike, you do something similar at our event in June every year, MongoDB World. You capture a lot of quality content at that as well, too, from people who come up to want to speak with you.
Absolutely. Always carry a microphone with me. And I'll be at .local San Francisco and .local Dallas and .local San Francisco. These are our user conferences that travel around the world. And I'd love to have a conversation with you. If you see me at a conference, make sure you come up and say hello.
Nice plug.
Check the show notes for dates and times.
Be careful. I'll put in my own plug.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's because if this is International Podcast Day, I'll be at our conference Current next week in Austin, Texas, and I'm sure I'll be having lots of interesting conversations. If anyone wants to come up to me, I love getting paid to just chat with developers. It's one of the best things.
I actually, now that you mentioned it, so I am a panelist. I don't run the podcast, but I'm a panelist on Svelte Radio. And we just had our conference, our first ever in-person conference last month. And people from Sweden were coming up to me telling me how much they love the podcast, even though the audio quality is really rough. You know, we don't have audio engineers. We don't have professionals in a microphone setting. It's just amazing the kind of reach that you can get in podcasting land. And I think something I think about a lot is the 99% rule, which is that most people lurk and consume content passively, and you only see them, they only come out of the woodwork when you have these events and they're there and they see you and you're like, and they come out to you and talk to you about the podcast. It's really great. I think maybe one way to prove the impact is how much of a draw you are by at your conference hosting like a, here's the, you know, the MongoDB podcast live. Here's the Confluent streaming audio podcast live, and seeing how many people show up just for that. And you'll find a lot. We have this in JavaScript circles as well. When you have a podcasters do their episode live, people love to see like the behind the scenes because they spend so many hours with these voices, never seen the faces doing the voices.
Yeah.
I know that I've been to a few of those kind of podcast live recordings, Sean, and the one thing that always stands out to me is I listen to most podcasts on maybe 1.25 speed, maybe a bit faster. And then you meet these people in person, you go, you talk so much slower than what I'm
used
to.
They're not as smart as they sound.
No, they're still smart. Don't get me wrong. But you're kind of so used to listening to them. The one podcast that I listen to, or at least I try to listen to, this is a quiet plug. We have a Spanish podcast in MongoDB called Unicode. And the two hosts are two developer advocates, Jorge and Diego. I turn that podcast slower. It's the only podcast because my Spanish is pretty rough. And they speak so fast because it's the two of them and their guests. And it's really good to try and brush up on your Spanish. And every now and then you pick up the normal technical words. But it's the only podcast that I listen to slower than real time. But most of it, anyone else, faster. I think I just like consuming things quicker, right?
I'm just jealous that you're managing to listen to a foreign language podcast. Way too much of a coward for that.
It's an interesting mix, you know, some of the episodes, and as I say, I'm listening to it maybe 3/4 speed or even less, and I'm trying to improve my Spanish and also, you know, keep on top of what they're talking about, because it's been immensely successful. And again, like we were speaking about at the beginning, they came to Mike and went, we're going to do a Spanish language podcast. And you go, really? A technical podcast? Everybody codes in quasi-English. Do we really need to do that? And it's been extraordinarily successful for both of them. And you know, again.
So we just experienced a technical glitch. We use a system called Zencastr. Little shout out to the Zencastr folks. They make an amazing product, and I've relied on it since the start of the MongoDB podcast. It is, however, reliant on the infrastructure, and sometimes the infrastructure is a little faulty. I do love that Zencastr records locally so that at any point in time, if there's a glitch in the infrastructure, you don't experience that in the recording because it records locally to your hard drive. That's tip number one for me is get your system in place, get your technology in place when you're going to record. Zoom is great, but I found that it's really challenging to get a track per guest, which is helpful when you may possibly experience overtalk or a chatter amongst multiple guests at the same time. So maybe let's open that up. And Chris, maybe talk about a tech tip that that you would share with someone thinking about starting a podcast.
My top tech tip would be invest in a decent microphone. It really is worth it. And once you've bought one, experiment with what makes your voice sound best. You're asking to sit inside people's ears for up to an hour at a time. Be nice to them. Give them the best sonic experience they can get. And I would gladly, if anyone has a tip, that's very tricky to extend to guests. You can't always arrange that your guest has a good quality microphone. And if anyone has a solution to that, I'm all ears.
Well, we've sent microphones to guests that weren't able to or didn't have a kit available to them. So we sent them. And sometimes that messes with the schedule. But I think you're right. It's absolutely worth it to have the best possible listening experience through a good mic. How about you, Sean?
Yeah, so I have tried to record on Zoom, and I've also tried, we use Riverside for Svelte Radio. We use Audacity for editing, which is which open source free tool, really amazing, but there is a bit of a learning curve. And yeah, the recording of separate tracks is super important. And I also would not recommend Zoom, not just because you actually, like, recording separate tracks on Zoom is just a toggle. You can find it. It's just hard to find. But you have to prioritize audio, right? When your internet bandwidth degrades, Zoom clearly prioritizes video, you know, prioritizes real time. Whereas I think for podcasting, you really have to prioritize separate tracks, particularly when the guests talk over each other. You want the ability to edit that out. You want the ability to, if one person's microphone is not as well tuned as the other, to independently just improve the quality in some way to rebalance, to clean out the noise, anything like that. I think it's super important. But I wish there was a good resource for looking at the profile of a audio of a voice speaking and to tweak it such that it sounds audio ready. Every time I listen to a Howard Stern talk, like a YouTube channel, his voice is, it's deep, but there's some audio engineering going on there that I don't know. And I wish, like, there was just a good guide to let me figure out like the EQ levels or whatever. I'll learn it. I just don't know where to start because it's hard to Google because it's kind of unspoken.
Yeah. I have some good resources that Eric, our editor, has shared with me. So I'll echo the Audacity plug. I mean, it's an amazing tool. I've used that from the very beginning. And Eric showed me how to create macros, stacked macros. So I will share with you the tips that Eric gave me and enabled me to create a stacked macro, which I apply to all audio on all of my podcasts. I do four now.
Hmm.
If I could jump in, the one thing I also wanted to ask was, pre-pandemic, getting people to do a podcast was probably quite hard because they were in office, they were in situ, they were used to face-to-face. You were trying to make an arrangement to meet them, as Chris said, in a pub, hopefully. how much has the pandemic contributed to the, I suppose, really the willingness of people to jump online, which is what we're doing now, and have a conversation? I think prior to that, I know we used to do some stuff years ago. People were quite reluctant. You couldn't say, you're going to record you online, then we're going to make it into a podcast and the whole world can listen. But now I think people are very much predisposed to this because we spend so much of our time, doing this. And the podcast piece is just stripping away everything else and taking the audio and putting it up for other people to consume. Am I correct in thinking it's a little easier to get guests now because of we're used to this online existence that we've been forced into for a couple of years?
I think it may have gone through a peak and a trough, actually. I think you're right. At the start of the pandemic, people were very wary to be involved in online conversations habitually. And then we kind of were forced to adapt to it, right? That became mm-hmm. our normal way of speaking to anybody. And then I think we started to get quite, after a couple of years, we got real fatigue for it. I certainly know for online conferences, virtual conferences, people roll their eyes if they're asked to speak at those.
Oh, totally. It's like you're talking to your screen. You've got no audience engagements. There's no serendipity. It's, a hallway track doesn't happen. A casual conversation doesn't happen. I'm not a fan of the online conferences, definitely. I agree with you wholly, Chris.
Yeah, we did them when they were an absolute necessity. But now I have this vision, like one day in my future, I'll be in a retirement home and I'll just be talking to the wall as an 85-year-old man. And the nurse will say, don't mind him. He thinks he's at an online conference.
I love it.
It's been permanently damaged by that experience. But
I think people are also investing more in their home setups because they treat it like more like mm-hmm. their office. So maybe you just get better audio, which is people know how to navigate Zoom a lot better, right? Like it's becoming a professional requirement to have a good mic, to have a good camera. So in a sense, maybe it's easier to get guests and to get good stuff out of your guests. But I also mentioned, on the listening side, every podcaster I was talking to in early 2020 was noting there was like something like a 20% drop in their listenership because people are not commuting, which makes a lot of sense. So there's sort of the demand and supply thing going on there as well. But I think probably things have gone back to normal. I would hope.
I think we're beneficiaries of a change in the societal norms. Like people are now used to, having meetings online, but also because the technology has gotten better. I don't know if you remember this, but Zoom was not always so good. Zoom used to be this thing where there would be echoes and, somebody's audio would be like blaring way over, and Zoom figured it out. Like they figured out the interface. They figured out like the non-audio interactions. And they figured out like echo cancellation. That's like that happens automatically now. I think it's a configuration switch. But I also wanted to say like some new things have come along, like an absolutely magical piece of software. It's called Crisp. I use it. And you can't hear this right now. The folks listening to the podcast can't hear this. But there is a lawnmower about, I'm going to say, 8 feet away from me running at full bore. And it's probably at like -2 decibels. Like it's loud. But you can't hear it because Crisp is running, and Crisp, KRISP.io, it filters out all the noises. I'm clapping now and you can't hear me.
We can see you.
It's absolutely magical.
That is.
I was going to ask, are you able to turn it off while still on this thing?
So I'm going to turn off Crisp and now you can hear me. Can you hear me clapping? Uh-huh. Can you hear the lawnmower?
Yeah. We can't. We still cannot hear the lawnmower. I think that's because you have a good mic.
Yeah, your mic is too good. It's just you.
That was starting to be a sales pitch for Crisp, and it's turned into a sales pitch for your microphone manufacturer.
Speaking of mics.
Yeah, speaking of mics, I was going to get into a little bit of that. Everyone gets the Blue Yeti, but that's a omnidirectional mic, which actually is the worst situation for podcasting. If there's only one thing you take away from this meta discussion on podcasting, is don't use Blue Yeti for microphone for podcasting.
Or right? If you're using it, make sure you have the settings right so that it's focused. It's a focal point microphone rather than omnidirectional.
It still picks up. I don't think there is a setting. So I have the Blue Yeti. It doesn't have a setting where it's only in one direction. So what you want is the cardioid microphone where it really points at your mouth. But the Blue Yeti always picks up front and back, at least, if not just the sides as well. So I have a Samson 9QU. There's a website called don't buy a yeti.com, which is just this epic, very, very petty rant about why Yetis are bad for audio recording. But I'm curious what you guys use.
So I use a Shure S7MB or SM7B, whichever it is. Yeah, it's very nice. Oh, I'll give you a bonus tip. If you are doing this on the cheap, then probably your laptop microphone is better quality than your earbuds, because they're tuned for telephone calls.
Ah, okay.
So that's a discount tip.
Excellent. These are all good tough tips. Speaking of technology, obviously the podcast gets consumed asynchronously wherever, whenever. Have you played around with Twitter Spaces and other kind of live synchronous audio? What's your thoughts on those?
So I've recorded several podcasts on Twitter Spaces. I think it's a huge time investment. You're basically not doing anything else if you're a host of the podcast of the space, because mm-hmm. you're always looking at who's coming up next to host. It's actually kind of it's work. It's real work. But I think what's magical about it is obviously Twitter promotes it right in front of everybody's faces, so you do get really good distribution, particularly if you have a big guest on that everyone follows. So that can get you a lot more reach. There's inbuilt discoverability in a way that podcasts don't have. And then the other thing is, of course, the spontaneity of a listener being able to just come up and ask a question, which you can't do in a podcast. And sometimes just people who are huge authorities on the space, they see your space is happening, they just hop in. So there's no scheduling of a guest. So there's just a randomness that people kind of love. That said, I think spaces are a lot of work, and I don't do them all the time. I'll do them in small
amounts. So good for reach and randomness. Chris, what's your experience? Have you done Twitter Spaces before?
No, I have to duck that question because I haven't. And I'm thinking now we'll experiment with it next month.
Let me know. I'd love to jump in.
Well, I'll follow up next international podcast.
Sean, you just made me think of something as it relates to Twitter Spaces. I have done them, and Shane and I have done them. But I kind of treated them like a recording room, and I set the discussion up ahead of time. And I don't think that that's the intention. I think it's more of a random thing, like you said. And I think you just kind of made me realize I need a new perspective on Twitter Spaces.
It's a hallway conversation where anyone can come and go as they please. And I think basically you're either optimizing for the live listening experience, or you're optimizing for the post listening experience. And that's a fundamental tension there, because I always think that the numbers are going to be bigger on anything that's asynchronous, right? Like that people can catch up on later on. So, if you were to host this discussion on Twitter Spaces, people are listening in live, then you would strip the audio and post it on the MongoDB feed. I would be optimizing for the MongoDB feed, not the people live in attendance. And I think that's not the right way to do it.
I want to ask you that question, though. What does that mean to optimize for that post?
Meaning if you have a call to action that you want to deliver, you do it to completion without paying too much attention to whether or not you want that sort of back and forth response. I don't know if I'm communicating this well, but for example, right, we would have spaces where there would be a lot of structure. We would have a planning session beforehand. Here's the five things we're going to cover, and then we're just going to go through them. That's very much optimizing for the long-lived audience, the asynchronous audience, because you have a plan. You're going to kind of go through them. Whereas a space that is live, that, imagine you're just in a conference in a hallway track, and people just coming along and inserting themselves in whatever questions. You would allow for more Q&A. You allow for more improvisation, which makes the variance in quality a lot higher. Mm. It could be really poor because someone could come in with a totally off-base question and just ruin the listening experience for 1,000 people. But then someone could come in with a really great question or a really great answer to a question that everyone's talking about, and that would improve the experience for a lot of people. So you just don't know.
They're the trade-offs, right? That's exactly what you're trying to do. I think, Mike, you and I did one very early on, and we opened it out to Q&A, and we got the Bitcoin bro. You know, they came on, they're pushing whatever. It's like, no, who has the button? Who can turn this person off? So, it's a give and take, okay?
Yeah.
For those who are actually very, intent on Twitter Spaces as a podcasting medium, you might want to check out the Oxide Computer Company, Brian Cantrell. They have been doing a regular Twitter Space. There's a bit of a script. There's a bit of planning and special guest invitation. So it is more on the spectrum of live chat versus podcasting. It's more on the spectrum of podcasting, but done live. So that's a nice constraint that they have. And then with some Q&A at the end. So I think that's a nice balanced. And if you want a positive example, they've done that for a few months now.
So we'll include links in the show notes. If you're listening to this and you're curious about that, follow up by checking the show notes. Sean, that was the Oxide Computer Company, right? And I think that's just
computer company. Yeah, they're very, very interesting company. I think it goes back to the old Alan Kay quote: anyone who's serious enough about their software should make their own hardware. And these people are very, very advanced software people who have had it with modern commodity hardware, and they started making their own.
Oh, fantastic!
That's a real rabbit hole.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, there's one final question I had. We talked a little bit about the technology of, creating a podcast. We talked a little bit about, how to convince stakeholders in your company and how much time it takes. The one thing on that time issue is consistency and cadence. I don't know how many podcasts I've followed. I really get into them. They're in my library. I get the weekly episodes, and then they're gone. They've disappeared. And I think that's incredibly frustrating. And for two reasons. Number one is you've left that audience behind and they've nowhere else to go. But number two, if you're investing time to producing a podcast, you need to give that time to grow. I mean, obviously, at some point in time, if you're not hitting those metrics, your company needs you to hit, et cetera, et cetera. But how important is that cadence to all three? How often are you podcasting? How often are you getting out the content?
We podcast once a week. And I think whatever schedule you're on, it's important to kind of commit to that schedule for the long term, So I don't think it quite matters so much if you're doing once a week or once a fortnight or once a month, as long as you stick to that and you can expect an episode coming every single interval, whatever your sprint length is, if you like. and again, it comes back to this idea. See, I think the big idea for developer relations is that any technology company ought to be talking to developers. And there is no expiry date on talking to developers, right? You are constantly having that conversation. The medium may change, but you can't say, like, we're going to do a podcast for a year and see how it goes. You've got to say, we're going to be doing conversations forever. And is podcasting the right medium for it? And I think it is. It's a way for us to all eavesdrop on the interesting conversations in our industry.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. Sean, your thoughts?
I see some companies do seasons. So they'll do season one, season two, and then they'll come on. They'll have good episodes for like 10 episodes, and then they drop off. And I think in the examination, it's nice to have themes to what you're doing and then to switch up the themes, but then you don't get to build a relationship week in, week out with the listener. And I think that's more important. So I am much more in favor of the weekly thing. It has been challenging on the podcast that I've been on to commit to weekly because most of us are not in the same privileged position that we are not full-time podcasters. Podcasters is number five or six on the list of things that we have to have going on. And the results show up accordingly, right? Because we don't take it as seriously, therefore it doesn't show up as well. So I have a little bit of conflict about that. Like, how seriously should we be investing in podcasting? There's a bit of a chicken and egg because there's no results until you invest. But what I've been doing is I've been surveying the fields. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I try to segment like what they do. You know, sometimes you're just discussing the news. You know, I think having a precise format, like you're developing a radio show, is useful. Like if you're discussing the news, if you're discussing like a successful migration, if you're discussing mm-hmm. a product launch, those are all well-known formats, and you can do a good job of each. And I think developing that format that people know and love you for is essentially what I'm seeking right now.
Mm. And Mike, your thoughts? I know it's constant in your planning. You know, when's the next episode? When is it coming out? Where are my guests? Where are these guests coming from?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll echo what's been said. Consistency is key, and I shoot for at least one episode a week. I think it's important. Developers, people in the tech industry, have an appetite for good, fresh information about tools and tech. And I try to position the MongoDB podcast as an outlet for that. And I try to inform, inspire, motivate, and educate. Those are the goals for the podcast. Where do the guests come from? They come largely from my contacts in the industry. I spend a lot of time out on the road speaking at conferences. I meet people, I'm shaking hands, I'm meeting, you know, very interesting people doing interesting things with technology. And that's probably the biggest source of guests. The second source of guests is internally. There's a lot of really amazing things happening at MongoDB, not to be too self-promotional, but really, I mean, there's some super bright people here doing some amazing things. And we've created this platform that, you know, that really with a goal to help developers become more effective and more easily do what they have to do. So what better way to help and help meet our goal than to have folks from, you know, the teams building. So engineers, product managers, product marketing managers, all talking about the tools and tips and tech. And then lastly, I do quite a bit of reading and trolling social media, looking for just those very same people doing interesting things with software and technology. And if you're listening to this, and you've got something interesting that other software developers might be interested in, please reach out. You can reach me on Twitter at mlin, or all over the place, LinkedIn, anywhere. But great question, though.
Excellent, excellent. And a very good plug at the end there, Mike. So hopefully that'll bring a floodgates of guests. So we're going to wrap up now. This is all about International Podcast Day. We hope that you've learned a little bit about, you know, the importance of what we think, and we'd be preaching to the converted here in this audience anyway, of podcasting and, you know, the benefits it brings. And I like that, you know, what you said there, Mike, inform, inspire, educate, etc., as well, too. And we touched on the technology. We had a technical hitch in the middle of this podcast, so it's going to be seamlessly stitched together. You will not know. I think a question for each of the three of you. You've been involved in podcasting long enough now, either producing your own or being guests, etc. You go into a new company, and Sean, you're in a new company a couple of months yourself. You meet the CEO in the lift. The 30-second pitch for why make a podcast. Off you go. Sean, I'm going to pick on you first.
Oh, geez. I'm the one that's been putting it off. It is an opportunity for you to get in your customers' ears and hear from human to human, the people working on the technology and using the technology on a day-to-day basis. And that builds connection unlike any other form of medium that developer advocates.
Excellent. I put you on the spot. So, Chris, you had 30 seconds to prepare your answer.
Oh, goodness. The trouble is I can cheat because I don't think I'd accept a new job if I don't get to do the podcast. I enjoy it too much to give it up.
Yeah, this is your deal breaker in the interview then.
So, yeah, right? It actually is. It's like it's a good one for my current employers because they've got something really sticky hanging over me, right? But I think I'd go back to what I said about conversations. Your company will be talking to developers somehow. You're either doing it well, you're doing it badly, you're doing it regularly or haphazardly. A podcast is a great way to engage them in a structured conversation that they can rely on.
Now, spotlight on you, Mike Lin. Anything else to add to those 30-second pitches?
I've kind of cheated because I've spent a lot of time thinking about this over the last couple of days, weeks, and I've actually written an article that I'd love for you to read. It's entitled Four Reasons Why Your Tech Company Should Launch a Podcast. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it's about the fact that if you're in a tech company, your listeners are waiting for you to reach them. They want to hear your message. You can become a thought leader in your industry through a podcast. Yes, as Sean mentioned, the competition is fierce. But I believe that every company has a unique target market. And within that target market are people that listen to podcasts. So there's a great overlap. And you're going to reach more people if you do launch a podcast. And then it comes down to crafting the message, measuring, listening to your audience, making sure that you're listening to your listeners and adapting your content to suit them and make them happy. So I hope we've done that today. Shane, great job with the questions.
Excellent. Oh, well, listen, I learned from the master himself, you know. So this has been a superb conversation. Mike, where do we read the 4 reasons why your company needs a podcast?
Yeah, it's going to be on the MongoDB blog, and I'm going to include links in the show notes. I don't have the actual URL because at the time we're recording this, the magic of podcasting, it actually hasn't been published yet, but it'll be published by the time these sweet tones reach your ears.
Excellent. And on that note, I would just like to say, Chris, Sean, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We wish everybody a happy International Podcast Day. This will become the norm. We will see cards and banners and balloons and flowers for all the podcast hosts throughout the world. So happy International Podcast Day, everybody. And many thanks to my guests today, Mike, Chris, and Sean. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check the show notes for links to all the things we discussed today, as well as links to contact information for both Chris Jenkins and Sean Swick-Swang. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Attention MongoDB enthusiasts. We've got some exciting news for you. On June 22nd, 2023, MongoDB is bringing its world-renowned .local conference to New York City. This is an event you won't want to miss. At MongoDB.local New York City, you'll have the opportunity to learn about the latest updates and tools to build and deploy mission-critical applications at scale. Whether you're a seasoned developer or just getting started with MongoDB, there's something for everyone at this action-packed event. Get ready to experience an announcement-filled keynote, dive into technical sessions on application development, data modeling, security, and much more. Plus, you'll have the chance to network with like-minded professionals and MongoDB experts. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to boost your MongoDB knowledge and skills. Save the date, June 22nd, 2023, in the heart of the Big Apple, New York City. For more information and to secure your spot, head on over to mdb.link/2023 or check out the show notes of this episode. Be sure to use the code PODCAST50 for a 50% discount on your tickets. See you there.